Hey, this is Lou Mangiello from WDW Radio, and you're listening to the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. Let's do this.
The tangents of squeak continue all the way to episode 296 of the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. Hey, can I pluck your harp? Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of the Five-ish Fangirls Podcast. So glad you could join us. Let's start off like we did every week on the virtual table and see who's joined us this week. Oh, my goodness.
This is Brittany in Bethlehem.
This is Chrissy in Salt Lake City.
This is Holly from Wisconsin.
And this is Rachel in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi.
Did you accidentally get some of the slop that Hen One would be normally munching on, or what?
I have no idea. I just... Things are... Wires are crossed and stuff.
It's Monday.
Yeah. I got a case in the Mondays, so...
Yeah. It's rainy and Zoom's acting up, which is the first, so bear with us.
Yeah. We're having a time, but you know what? Better than sitting and watching paint dry or the grass grow, so.
True.
Anyway, let's do the news. Not a whole lot of news.
Mm-mm.
And two-thirds of it's not necessarily good news.
Not at all.
Yeah, so first up, piece of 10 o'clock news.
And this is a quasi-shocking piece to 10 o'clock news.
Not to me, actually. So,
well, I mean, I
knew he was sick.
I did too, but I didn't know he was that sick, so it kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah. But Eddie Van Halen, one of the namesakes of, you know, you think like Eddie, 80s, like hair, metal,
mm-hmm.
rock, mm-hmm. you know, you think Van Halen's one of the first ones that comes to mind. So, but he has passed away due to cancer at the age of 65. So of course, you know, Van Halen, he was, guitar player and really, really good guitar player too. It's crazy the mm-hmm. things I've been reading about him since he passed, the fact that he was considered an autodidact, mm-hmm. which means he could play almost any instrument but could not read music.
Yes.
But you could just hand him an instrument and he could play it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, and he was also a classically trained pianist.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
that's where we get the nice synth montage and Jump.
Yeah, Jump, Panama, Hot for Teacher. He was the one who did the ripping guitar solo in Michael Jackson's Beat It.
Yes.
Which he did mm-hmm. he did like when the other guys were out of town, and he went into the recording studio for like 20 minutes and recorded his bit.
He was like
here you go, and he's like, nobody's gonna listen to this, and so like he barely got paid for it, and then it became like one of Michael Jackson's biggest hits and one of the most recognizable like guitar solos on the entire mm-hmm. planet. He helped found Van Halen
mm-hmm.
back in the day. So one of the top 20 best-selling artists of all time. Band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007. Rolling Stone magazine listed him number 8 in the list of 100 greatest guitarists.
And I don't disagree with that ranking. I mean, heck.
I don't know who number 1 is on that list, but
I don't know either, but hey. That's where I would put him. I would put him in the top 10. Yeah.
Yep. So, but yeah, he's been sick for a while, because I remember seeing a news article. It's probably been a couple of years now. And I'm not sure if that's when he was diagnosed or if it just made the news because it was significant, but he had to have a third of his tongue removed. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because of the cancer, but it eventually got into his esophagus and just, I'm sure, just spread beyond what modern medicine could do for him. So it's unfortunate. Yeah, next time you hear Jump on the radio, yeah,
mm-hmm.
put a little extra hitch in your oomph in your jump.
Jump for, exactly.
For Eddie. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
And then another piece of not so good news is,
we'll call this one 9:30 news.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll call this 9:30 news. Is D23 Expo, as we lovingly call it, Disney Fandom Christmas. They have decided to, because the show has been happening every other year since D23 as a fan club, essentially, is what it started as, for Disney fans. They've been doing it every other year, but it's been on odd number years since they started. But so they're should have been one next year, but they have gone ahead and decided to move it to 2022, September of 2022. So how much of that is caused by what's going on right now and the fact that Disneyland, because it's always held at the Anaheim Convention Center, which is just down the road from Disneyland, is not open yet. Mm-hmm. Walt Disney World has been open-ish. Mostly open-ish, mm-hmm. but Disneyland has not yet reopened, and doesn't seem to be anytime soon. So how much of the current climate is because of that, and also because that would put it closer to they can kick off the Disney company's 100th anniversary celebration early. So, because the Walt Disney Company will actually be turning 100 years old in 2023. It was founded in 1923, which is crazy.
Yeah,
I know.
If you were flies
when you're having fun.
Yeah, really. mark your calendars. September 9th through 11th, 2022. Anaheim Convention Center. That will be D23 Expo. Fandom Christmas. Disney Fandom Christmas. So we will we'll see. We'll see what happens. So yeah, because there's like some big milestones coming up for Disney in the next like decade, if that. So like the Magic Kingdom and Walt Disney World Resort will be celebrating its 50th next year, and then Epcot Center will be celebrating its 40th in 2022, because it opened in 82. So there's that. And then the Walt Disney Company as a whole, 100 years in 2023. So that's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. When you think about it. So
I know. It's like, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, the 25th anniversary of Walt Disney World's And they just, you know, it was everywhere. It was on Disney Channel, on the VHS tapes that we bought that year. They were just making a big deal out of it. It's like, you know, 25 years. Yeah, that's a big deal. And now we're like coming up on 50. I'm like, oh, I feel old.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean.
Well, and then also next year, let's see. Yeah. Magic Kingdom, Walt Disney World, 50 years next year. Next year will also be Walt's 120th birthday. So 120th anniversary of Walt Disney's birth. So yeah, kind of crazy.
I know. Insane how everything goes. But hopefully they'll be able to have it, and all of this craziness will have died down, gone away. Things will be getting back to normal. I don't know. We keep saying that, but I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but in the meantime,
I said, mark your calendars, but do it in pencil.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Well, what one thing there is to look forward to that seems to be it is actually going to happen. This clip dropped this morning, and I got to watch it before I went to work, and I was very excited. The Animaniacs revival, they've put out a promo clip, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the humor, the writing, it's the pop culture.
It looks exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell it's newer. I mean, they even lampshade it, like, you know, widescreen and the lines.
Well,
and
the major difference is they made sure to point those out.
Yes.
So.
So it's like, they're like, yes, we know it looks a little bit different, but at the same time, it's all the same. Like, even the voice actors, which, you know, these voice actors have been doing voice acting forever, and they know how to, you know, make themselves sound like they did however many years ago it is. and it's great. And the fact that it's Jurassic Park and Steven Spielberg is the John Hammond character. I mean, that was just so clever. And this is the sort of thing that the Animaniacs was for back in the day. Because some people have said, like, oh, you know, you're referencing an almost 30-year-old movie. How are you going to make that for modern audiences? I'm like, you don't understand. Jurassic Park was, like, the biggest movie of 2020 because of reruns in the movie theaters. So I'm pretty sure younger kids, they'll, like... Like, my niece, who's 9, is, like, into dinosaurs big time. She's seen Jurassic Park, and she gets it.
Yeah.
So, it's like, yeah, they'll get the jokes, and the one, and even if they don't, it's Animaniacs.
Yeah.
And they're funny, it's clever, and it feels like it's trying to appeal to a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times in the past few years they've been running Jurassic Park marathons left, right, and center with the originals and the Chris Pratt movies. So
I was going to say,
it's there.
Yeah, I know, but yeah, people are weird. But anyway, Animaniacs. It looks the jokes seem, you know, it's in that same vein from the 90s, and it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I really hope that I mean, there's still a chance. There's still a little part of me that's like, don't get your hopes too high, because things do tend to fall apart in some of these things. But you know what? I'm willing to give it a shot, and I'm excited for it. And yeah, I'll give Hulu my money. I'm already giving them my money. So.
Give them your time.
Give them my yes. Yeah. So it looks like it'll be fun. So if you haven't seen that clip, we've posted it on our Facebook page. We'll put a link in the show notes. But it's,
We've gotten a lot of laugh emoji reactions.
Yes. And you know what? I think we all could use a laugh these days. So
yeah.
Yes.
I love the line. These don't look like reruns.
Runs. Yeah. No.
And Pinky and the Brain is coming back.
Yeah. Yay! You're bringing back Pinky and the Brain. It's like they just took that one scene in Jurassic Park where they see the dinosaurs for the first time, and, you know, what's his face? It's like, well, we clocked the T-Rex. He's like, you got a T-Rex. And in this case, they're like, you're bringing back Pinky and the Brain.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Just wait. One of the two of them will have a pet raptor.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
That'll go over real well.
Yeah, I'm sure. And then, of course, you know, they have a Jeff Goldblum XP.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, you guys.
And they still have the lawyer going, we're going to make so much money. So, yeah, that made me really happy because one, it's Animaniacs, and now we're really getting to see what the new one's gonna look like. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that works. That looks like what I expect it to look like. So, mm-hmm. And then you throw all the pop culture references in there that they do so very well. Mm-hmm. So
this is like, yep, this is the stuff we grew up on and knew and loved.
Yeah, it's like, yep, thumbs up. So far, mm-hmm. so good. Mm-hmm. Yep. You got me tentatively optimistic.
Bar yes. is being raised, but not too high. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Bar is being set.
Yes, bar is being set. So anyway, yeah. So mark your calendar. This one can be in pen, as far as I mean, it's streaming, so
yeah.
Seems like it's ready to go. November 20th, they'll drop on Hulu. I don't know if it's gonna be week to week or all at once. But we'll find out.
Yeah.
So
that's it really for the news, but we do have some miscellaneous housekeeping. So
yes, indeed. I was on the Happiness and Darkness podcast. That episode dropped last night. Nick and I discussed Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And honestly, I like this was so much fun. I mean, I hadn't seen Guardians 2 for a while, and I just was like, and Jared and I have been so busy, I'm like, Jared, you're gonna sit down and watch this with me, and he was like, oh well, twist my arm.
Mm-hmm. And then he gives you a laundry list of things to talk about.
Well, yeah. No, not all of it was from him. A lot of it was
I know, but I like the fact that you're like, yeah, he gave me talking points.
we discuss them, and yeah. I'm like, yes, I will mention that, and so yeah. he had some good ones. That's how we roll.
Yep.
Yes.
But yeah, so you know, it was fun. Thanks again to Nick for having me on, and hopefully I'll get to be on again, because I had a really fun time with it. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I look forward to more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we just need to get Brittany on there, and
yes,
that's what Nick said as we were kind of wrapping up. He's like, I've got Holly, I've had Rachel, I just need Brittany. And I'm like, well, I'll tell Brittany. So yeah. Brittany, you need to
he can work around your work schedule.
Yeah. 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 Look, and get in touch with him. He'll give you the list of what hasn't been covered yet.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. He's like, because I picked Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and he's like, I was so happy that you did, because now I can finally watch it.
Yeah.
So no, Nick's a good guy, and I enjoyed my time very much. So
mm-hmm. yes, and I told him I'd throw my hat in the ring for the Fantastic Four remakes. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whenever it gets around to it. So
yeah,
so listen for Holly on that podcast.
Yeah,
at some point in the future.
Yep. At some point in the future, yes.
Yes.
Hey, I did Howard the Duck, and I survived. So
yeah. Yeah, Holly and I are like old hats and guesting on other people's shows. it can be a bit daunting. It's one thing to be on your own show. It's another to be on someone else's.
That is mm-hmm. true. I will admit I was a little nervous, because it was, you know, I'd never guested on another show before. But, you know, Nick was great, put me at ease, and we had a fun time. Now I'm like going to be on the gold standard in a little over or a little less than a month. We're talking about Gone with the Wind, and I told Nick, I was all, well, that discussion's probably going to be a little more lively.
Yeah, just a little.
But that's okay. We'll make it fun either way.
Oh yeah, definitely. So. You know we love reading, but sometimes it's hard to find time to physically sit down with a book, which is why the Five-ish Fangirls has proudly partnered with Audible. Audible is a leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to celebrity memoirs. Whatever makes you squee, there's a perfect listen for you. Every month, members get one credit to pick any title, plus two Audible originals. Whether you're adventuring through time and space, running from dinosaurs, or capturing ghosts, with the free app, audiobooks go where you go. You can download titles and listen offline, anytime, anywhere. Even if you switch devices, you'll never lose your place. And right now, Five-ish Fangirls listeners can sign up for a free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/fiveishfangirls. That's 30 days to check out not only their huge collection of audiobooks, but also podcasts, guided wellness programs, theatrical performances, A-list comedy, and exclusive Audible originals you won't find anywhere else. So continue the joy of reading with Audible. Don't see a title that trips your trigger one month? No problem. Your credit will roll over to the next month, and you can quit anytime and keep the books you've acquired forever. For more details and to sign up for your free 30-day trial, visit audibletrial.com/fiveishfangirls. That's audibletrial.com/fiveishfangirls. And now, back to the podcast. Alrighty. So that is that. And we don't have any feedback, so we can move on to this week's main topic. Our John Lennon episode aside, I guess we're gonna, as we get closer to Halloween, we're getting a bit more spooky here.
Yes, indeed.
So we are going to talk about the 1985 Disney animated feature film, The Black Cauldron.
Legend has it, there was once a king so cruel and so evil that the gods feared him. Since no prison could hold him, he was trapped forever in the form of a great black cauldron.
The Horned King, that black-hearted devil.
Walt Disney Pictures presents The Black Cauldron. Escape into a world of darkness.
Are you coming?
Me? Go in there? Oh, no, no, no. It's a terrible place.
A world of excitement. A world of dreams.
Aaron, the greatest warrior, a true hero.
And through the magic of 70mm photography and 6-track Dolby sound, you will be transported to a fantasy event for the entire family.
Look, look, sire, it's working.
Soon the Black Cauldron will be mine.
In the great tradition of Disney animated classics, now comes the newest Disney spectacle of them all, The Black Cauldron.
Which, kind of like a Goofy movie, I had never seen this before. Until I watched this. Yeah, no, I'd heard about it. I recognized the name. But other than that, I had no idea what the plot was. I didn't know who any of the characters were. Nothing other than when I was looking at the voice, the cast list, and I was reminded that John Hurt does one of the voices in here, because I remember seeing it when he passed, looking at his past works. So other than that, I knew nothing going into this. So
you knew nothing, Jon Snow.
Yes, so, I knew nothing, Rachel, Jon Snow.
What'd you think?
It's dark. Very. Yes. This is definitely appropriate for like Halloween season.
Mm-hmm. I think this was the first Disney movie that got a PG-13 rating, if memory serves.
PG.
Or PG. Okay. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Did not exist yet.
Yeah. In fact, there was one thing I read that there were some scenes that had to be cut out because then it probably would have got, it was skirting the R of the time. Ooh. I mean, 80. Wow. You know, 85.
Yeah. Because there was no PG-13. Yeah, that didn't come until
they had to do some heavy edits in certain
places. Yeah, they had to do some editing for ratings, But then they also had to do some ratings cuts because the powers that be decide. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get into this. This movie, the film itself, like it's good. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not. I know it's got kind of a cult following. It's not quite cult like as popular, I think, as like Goofy Movie or Emperor's New Groove, where they're like it didn't do well at the time, and now it's become like this big hit now that it's more readily available to people with like streaming services or stuff. But I know it still has fans out there. I don't think I enjoyed this nearly as much as the Goofy Movie, although I really can't compare.
It's kind of an odd duck because one thing you think about, you know, movies in the 80s in general, and this is what I was thinking as I was watching this. I'm like, I feel like I'm watching a Disney movie with mixed in with some Don Bluth, with some
Amblin
entertainment. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just sort of an amalgamation of a bunch of different things. And then reading the history of it, and there's like it's like the epitome of too many cooks in the kitchen.
And then they're trying to throw a little bit of the Dungeons and Dragons element,
right? Yeah.
Into
this is like Onward, about 30 years too early.
Yeah, it really was ahead of its time. They didn't know what to do with it. I mean, I felt like, I mean, they're just that kind of sort of dark, gritty kind of movies that were coming out for kids at the time, you know, in the mid 80s. And I kind of feel like this was Disney trying to do that, but Disney being Disney, they really couldn't pull it off for one reason or another. Like, Eisner wanted one thing, Katzenberg wanted another thing, Roy Disney wanted this.
Once again, we're going to be referencing Eisner, Katzenberg,
three working relationship.
Power struggle.
Yes.
It was Disney in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, but for all its faults, I mean, Black Cauldron was based on the Lloyd Alexander series of novels, The Chronicles of Prydain, which The Black Cauldron is actually, I want to say it's the title of the second book, but the movie, but actually it's a mix of like the first and second book,
right, with a little bit from 3, 4, and 5 actually.
Okay. So, I actually haven't,
one and two,
yeah, I actually haven't read the books. Jared has, and he sat down to watch part of this with me. He's like, I don't remember any of this from the book. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that doesn't surprise me.
I've got them sitting in my Tubi read.
Yeah, it's apparently, yeah, it's like they took just like random bits from all 5 of the books and just threw them into the cauldron. And
there's a
movie.
Disney's never done that before. No, Artemis Fowl.
Well, apparently, from what I understand of people that have read the books, that even though this is such a mishmash of the book, of stuff from the book series, that actually the way this story is told, still, it's not accurate, but it still has the same like feel of the books.
It's got the spirit of
heart,
the story,
and the spirit of the story. Yeah.
If not the actual story.
Yeah.
the letter of the story, let us
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So do we want to do the behind the scenes stuff first and get the bad out of the way and then talk about the plot and the actual movie itself? Which one do we want to do first, the good stuff or the bad stuff?
Let's talk about the plot and the characters, okay. And then okay. see where we go from there. So okay. It's you know, so the story is, you know, this boy Taryn is the assistant pig keeper, and I first saw this movie as an elementary school, and it was one of those things like, you know, the class earned a movie party. So they watched the Black Cauldron. I don't know why we picked the Black Cauldron. It just was there. So
Disney. It'll be kid friendly.
Yeah. I must have been like in third or fourth grade. So I was probably, it didn't scare me.
I thought Bambi was kid friendly too. So.
Well, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, our teachers, I think, showed us one of the animated Lord of the Rings. I'm pretty sure it was the Rankin and Bass one. But anyway, so I watched it in school and I remembered parts of it. But yeah, so Taryn's the assistant pig keeper. They have this pig Henwin who can see you know, create visions. Taran doesn't know this, but he just wants to go off and be a warrior, be a knight, and he thinks, you know, keeping pigs is beneath him. Meanwhile, Henwin, you know, shows that the Horned King, this big evil entity.
Yeah, because there's like a prologue at the beginning where it explains like there is this evil Horned King who had all this power and was bad, and you know, just wanted to like kill everybody and everything. And this other king was able to strip him of his power and shoved it all into this giant cauldron and then hid the cauldron away.
Yeah. So the Horned King's looking for the Black Cauldron. Henwin can help him find the Black Cauldron. So Taran has to take Henwin and go somewhere else so she'll be safe. Mm-hmm. Along the way, Henwin gets taken by they're either dragons or wyverns. I can't really tell. And then Taran has to go after her, and he meets Gurgi, which is this little furry creature who, I mean, that's actually how he talks in the book, apparently. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that
munchies and crunchies.
Munchings, yes. Gurgi needs munchings and crunchies.
He talks kind of like Stitch.
Yes.
But he kind of sounds like a mix between Stitch and Donald Duck.
Yes.
Which I thought maybe he was voiced by one of the Donald Duck like voice people, but he's not. The guy that voices him has nothing to do with Donald Duck, even though he sounds kind of Donald Duckish.
So I guess there was maybe he was a backup for that, or backup plan B or something. I mean, if you think about these sort of fantasy stories where, you know, the warrior, you know, the heroes have to go to the really scary castle, and that's usually at the end of the movie or the story. Taran actually ends up at the Horned King's castle fairly early on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does.
to rescue Henwin, which, you know, that kind of lends to this being a story told over multiple parts. But then there he meets Princess Ilanwi and the bard Fluter Flam. And it's Welsh,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or you know, it's based, the story comes from Welsh mythology. Mm-hmm. If I understand correctly. So you know, they rescue Henwin, except that, and then they got to go find the Black Cauldron before the Horned King does. They meet up with the little pixies, the fair folk. Which I'd actually forgotten about them until I watched them this time. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, those guys are in it. I remembered about the witches. That was one part Jared came down. He's like, I think those witches have one too many eyes. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So maybe, I guess they're all one-eyed witches in the book. I don't know. And then the witches, you know, Taran trades his magic sword that he found at the castle for the Black Cauldron, except the Black Cauldron cannot be destroyed unless someone goes into it of their own free will. But then the Horned King ends up with the cauldron, brings back his army of the dead, and
Cauldron born.
Yes. And you know, John Hurt gives an amazing performance, mm-hmm. even if the animation of the Horned King at the climax is a little off.
And the Horned King really does not have a lot of screen time either.
No, but it's the eyes.
This movie's really short too. It's only like an hour and 22 minutes. So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. That's why I was like, it really is. It's like it feels like it should be longer, but at the beginning, the Horned King, like, you can't, he just looks like a skull. His head looks like a skull. He's got horns and a cloak. But then at the end, I always thought his eyes, when they started coloring them in red, it just didn't work. But that's me. But I mean, they tried to make him look menacing and scary, and it made him less so to me. I was like, he should have just kept his eyes blank, or, you know, turn him into a dragon like you did for Maleficent and Sleeping Beauty. But yeah, so they defeat the Horned King, push him into the cauldron, and Gurgi, he goes in, he jumps in because he wants to protect his new friends, even though mm-hmm. he's kind of been annoying to them. And Taryn's given him crap for being obnoxious. And he just kind of says, Gurgi has no friends. And he falls in the cauldron. And you're like, okay, we need to love Gurgi because he's
horrible.
Yes. That really surprised me, though.
Heart-wrenching scene.
Yeah. It's sad. You know, because Gurgi's been kind of like this kind of almost Gollum Schmeagol character mm-hmm. where he knows like his way around the lands and could be helpful, but he's just so annoying to the humans that they don't want anything to do with him. So when it got to the point where it's like, okay, someone's gonna have to sacrifice themselves into the cauldron to stop this from happening, and Gurgi goes in, and I never seen this before, so even after he went in, I still kind of expected Taryn to go in. Like, that's what you expect. Like, he's the hero.
Yeah.
He's the protagonist of this movie. You would expect him to be the one to do the hero sacrifice, but no, it's just this random little furry guy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. He's kind of the Gollum with a, I called him a Gollum with a mix of Jar Jar Binks because he is kind of obnoxious. But because mm-hmm. he sacrifices himself, it's like, okay, I guess I can't hate you. And every time mm-hmm. I watch this movie, I'm like, okay, I know what you're gonna do in the end. So I feel bad for thinking you're annoying, but you're kind of. Just give him an apple.
Gurgi's kind of got a one-track mind in the beginning. Is give him food.
Yeah,
give
he's very food.
He's like a Wookiee.
Yes,
he's like a Wookiee thinking with his stomach.
Yeah, yes.
Just give him the food, and you're good.
Yep. Yeah. So that's sort of the gist of it. I mean, you have Princess Ilanwe, who she People will often say, like, why isn't she in the princess lineup? Which I get it.
Is she an actual princess?
I don't know, because they call her princess, but then the
Horn King calls herself princess.
Yeah.
But then later she's referred to as a scullery maid.
Yes. Yeah. And I was just like, when I first saw that, and I was like, scullery maid. And I didn't really know what a scullery maid was, but that's definitely not a princess. Mm-hmm. So where's the story? I mean, again, this might be in the books. It could very well be. I guess I need to read these, add it to my list, my ever growing list. Why did the Horn King just call her a scullery maid? I mean, she's got this little bauble that floats around and doesn't really do a whole lot. So, and again, I feel like there's a lot of story here that, yes, Disney wanted to, it seemed like they wanted to do more with this series. I mean, they said that they wanted to get the rights to it and turn this could be something like akin to Snow White or Sleeping Beauty for them, mm-hmm. but it just didn't get off the ground, which, I don't hate this movie. I actually kind of enjoy it for what it is. I just feel like there could have been more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I there are these little nuggets of things that are just spread out through here, and I'm like, okay, I want to know about that. Oh, but we're gonna go off and do this other thing, like the witches. I mean, they get enough screen time and they get enough to do, but at the same time, I feel like it's just sort of superficial and surface level. It's like there's more to it. Like, why do you want the cauldron? How do you know about it? Where did you come from? What's your deal? Just all of this. It's just like, there's just so much here that I wish I knew more about. And maybe that's because I expect a lot more from my fantasy, because I was, reading Lord of the Rings and Shannara and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, this is one of the first Disney animated features to not have musical numbers, like,
right,
okay, mm-hmm. yeah, maybe you're not telling us the story with actual telling, but then you would usually have like a character like break out into song, and that would explain some things to us, mm-hmm. and that never happens either.
Yeah, I mean, you have a character who's a wandering minstrel, he's a bard. Why is there no music in this?
Well, it doesn't help that the strings keep breaking.
Right. Yeah. And I think there was something, and I missed it this time, but I swear there's something about his flute that, or his lute, I should say, his harp, that the strings break if he lies.
Yes.
And I mean, I must have missed that. Maybe I was doing something with Lottie and I missed the line, but I was like, where did that go? And they don't really reference it a lot other than the strings randomly break. Mm-hmm. So I guess that wasn't, maybe I just didn't pay attention well enough. Like I said, I was watching with my
I don't know
daughter.
If it's actually explicitly said. I think it's just supposed to, I think it's one of those things where it's like, you know, where he's, when you first come across him, he's been captured, mm-hmm. and he's trying to be like, oh no, I'm a great, you know, I'm a famous art, you know, mm-hmm. musician and all that. And the strings keep breaking. Like it'd be like, you know, Pinocchio's nose growing.
Yeah.
So
there's some good ideas here, and it was, and you know, maybe it was better executed. Just they had to cut a whole lot because of ratings and a lot of other things going on. So I like the story. I just wish there was, I wish there was a little more meat on the skeleton here.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah. But not the actual skeletons.
But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not that. I don't know. That's my take. What do the rest of you think?
I considered the story very simple, but like I said, there are a few times where it subverted my expectations. Like I really expect when they're like, you know, to stop the Horn King from bringing back his army of undead warriors, someone has to throw themselves into the cauldron of their own free will. And I was like, well, that's easily foreshadowing right there, that's what Taryn's gonna have to do. And it's like, you know, and then he meets this girl who supposedly is a princess, maybe, and you know, they're on the young side here. Like Taryn's supposed to be like 14 and the princess is supposed to be like 12, so there's not really a whole lot of room for like real romance there, but still, you know, there could be a developing friendship that could turn into romance when they're a little older. And other than like she gives him a peck on the cheek, there's not really a whole lot there. And yeah, we don't really know a lot about her, whether she actually is a princess. She mentions she has a book, which I would assume probably has magic or something in it, because she's got that floating orb glowy thing, but then it's not really explained. But she's just like, it's magic, silly. And they're like, but is it your magic? Was it gifted to you from someone? We meet some fairies. It was some fairy folk at one point, so it's like, yeah, magic is a thing. And then there's the witches, who all have a different idea on how witchy business should be run. Like one is like really like mean, and then another one's like kind of in the middle, and the other one's just all happy-go-lucky. And like they cut out a whole bunch, we'll get into what gets cut out, but like they cut out a whole bunch of scary stuff, yet they kept in like an entire sequence of Flam being turned into a frog and getting stuck in the one witch's bosom.
Mm-hmm.
Like they kept that in there.
Yeah.
Because that's kid appropriate.
I know.
He's like, where did you go? And he's like stuck in her cleavage and he keeps popping out and then falling back in because he's trying to get out, but her boobs are too big. So he can't escape.
So, a family picture.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like, it's cute. And I can see what they're trying to do, but it's just, you know, if the animators had been allowed to make the movie that they wanted to make, mm-hmm. having an R-rated animated Disney movie probably wouldn't have been a good idea. But if they could have made the movie they wanted to make without the R rating, and still keep it not rated R, then I think we probably would have got a more cohesive story told to us.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, I feel bad because I really want to like this. I want to be one of those. It's like, yes, Black Cauldron. It's one of those hidden gems in Disney. And I do enjoy it. It's just not up there with those others that you mentioned, Goofy Movie, Emperor's New Groove. And maybe that's because I don't expect Disney to go real dark and to do that gritty sort of thing. And I mean, they did it with, you know, several, you know, many years later with Pirates of the Caribbean, but that's live action. That's not animated. And even when they have done those darker ones like Atlantis or Treasure Planet, I like those ones. I really like, and I wish that they could have done better. But I guess, you know, when you say Disney animated movie, you expect a certain sort of style. And if they try to deviate from that, you know, the audience, public at large, is kind of like, not so much, even though Sleeping Beauty's got some pretty dark moments, but then there's also the pretty princess singing in the forest and the fairies doing their funny fairy things. So it's well balanced, whereas this one, it's a little bit all over the place. So yeah. Anyway.
So I guess we can kind of use that as our segue into why did stuff get cut?
And how did we end up
with this particular movie? So as Chrissy said, this comes from a series of books, very loosely based on these books, but then the books themselves are based on Welsh mythology, hence the names like Flidwyr Flam with all the 27 F's and W's in there. The books are compared to now, they are old. They were like 20 years old-ish once the movie came out, because they were written and published in the 60s. The idea of actually them turning that story into a feature film actually goes all the way back to 1971. So Walt died in 66. And then Walt Disney World, which was, you know, Walt was working on when he passed, opened in 71, by Roy Disney, Walt's brother, who had taken over after Walt's passing. And then Roy passed away not long after that. So by the early 70s, the Walt Disney Company had lost a lot of their like founding members. Walt was gone, Roy was gone. A lot of the original animators, the guys known as Walt's Nine Old Men, were starting to retire and move out of the company and all that. So they were kind of floundering. As far as the film side of it was concerned, they had this brand new theme park in Florida, which was great. But their bread and butter was animated movies. So they were kind of like, oh crap, what do we do? We're losing all the people that have made this company what it is up to this point. So they optioned the books in 71. They didn't actually get the film rights until 73. So it was a couple of animators. There were still a couple of the Nine Old Men still there in the early 70s. Ollie Johnson and Frank Thomas were two of them. And they were the ones that convinced the studio that they could turn this into a movie if they did it right. And they said it might be as good as Snow White. It took them a while to even figure out what story they wanted to tell, because they're in the books, they're like 30 characters. There's just a lot there for them being essentially children's books. If you've seen pictures of the actual books, they don't seem that big.
Yeah, they're really not. In fact, two of them, the Black Cauldron one, the Newbery Honor book, and I want to say the fourth book was the Newbery Winner, which, you know, is the award for outstanding literature for children.
Yeah.
So it's a good series. all, you know, as far as I can tell, like I said, I haven't read it. Yeah. I guess I'm going to have to at some point, but
won't take long. The books aren't that big.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it's for children. So it's,
yeah,
but just because it's for children doesn't mean there aren't some scary parts to it. I mean, think of the books, you know, you probably read.
Well, I mean, The Hobbit was intended for children. So
yes, yes. And it's still, it's, you know, it's got the trolls and they're going to eat him and, mm-hmm. and all these different things. So yeah. So there's a lot of, and a dragon, and there's a lot of scary stuff you can put in a book. Because it's a book, and as long as everyone gets a happy ending, then it's okay. You can, it's for kids.
Yeah. Yep. So Ollie and Frank, they started on development, because at this point they were still doing hand-drawn animation. Production on these types of things takes a while. So, the pre-production started in 73. The movie was originally slated for release in 1980. So they were going to spend 7 years on it, essentially, or close to it. Another artist, Mel Shaw, created some conceptual sketches, which Ron W. Miller, who was Walt's nephew, who is now CEO, considered the concept designs to be too advanced for what their animators were capable of at the time. So by August of 78, they decided to push the release back to Christmas of 84 because they were having trouble doing realistic human characters. So there, its originally released date of 1980 went to The Fox and the Hound, which honestly, there are parts of that movie I find more disturbing than this. But that's just me. So it gets stuck in limbo, development limbo, essentially. They grabbed another writer who was a veteran storyboard artist, Vance Gary, he was chosen to create the storyboards that would really outline the plot and the action and locations and stuff. They set up the three principal characters, he took the Horn King, and his concept of the Horn King was a big-bellied Viking who had a red beard, a fiery temper, and wore a steel helmet with two large horns.
Okay.
Yeah. Not quite.
No. I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about a leader of an undead army. I think you'd just something a bit more. Maybe bit more macabre. Yeah.
Need to go more with the lich route here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which they
apparently
did.
None of these guys play D&D.
No. And you know where this is coming in at the, you know, the other thing you have to know is this is coming in at the heyday of D&D or the early days of D&D, and a lot of people who've read The Chronicles of Prydain are also D&D fans. Not all, but a fair number of them. So, I mean, not that I really think Disney would care about that, but it is something to consider when you think of the public's acceptance, I guess, of this movie, or, you know, why it didn't do as well as they'd hoped.
Yeah.
It's a thought. I don't know if it's how real it is, but eh.
So they brought in John Musker, who was another animator, to be the director. So he got attached to the project. He worked on trying to expand several sequences during the first act. Those were eventually deemed too comedic, so those were scrapped.
Oh, gosh.
Once they finished production on The Fox and the Hound, they pulled several other folks from that to get involved. Ron W. Miller decided there were too many cooks in the kitchen and decided that some of them didn't need to be involved. So he brought in Joe Hale, who was a layout artist, to serve as producer. Once he came on, actual like physical production really started to begin in 1980.
Remember, originally they wanted it to be released in 1980.
Yeah. They had several people working on character artwork. I can't remember the guy's name. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. There's a video I watched on YouTube last night where this guy goes into the whole like backstory of it and actually like shows some things that changed and all that. But like they brought in like a guy who used to work for Marvel that worked on Ghost Rider at one point. So the direction they were going as far as the look was very macabre and dark, and I don't even know all the words to think of, like
just very grim.
Very grim. If it helps you to visualize the idea that they were going, one of the artists that was brought on and then eventually let go because his art was not, they deemed was not the direction they wanted to go, was a guy named Tim Burton. So that's the direction they were going.
Yeah.
Before they decided that Tim Burton's style was not the direction that they wanted to go.
I read that and I'm curious. I'm like, what would Tim Burton's Black Cauldron look like?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it would have worked on some level if they were consistent with it, but oh boy.
Yeah. So
go do Batman, Tim.
Yeah, really.
Or whatever was going on at the time.
Well, Batman at that point still not what for like another what 9 years?
Nine, ten, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But apparently he had already developed his style enough that Disney was like, no, we're gonna go a different direction.
It's like, thank you for your interest. Don't call us, we'll call you.
Yeah. But I think that's funny that they're like, yeah, this was too dark and grim because Tim Burton was working on it. I'm like, well, that tells me everything I need to know. So Tim Burton, along with some others, were like, yeah, don't call us, we'll call you. And they were like, no, we really want this to be more like Sleeping Beauty style. So they brought in... again, one of the Walt's nine old men, Milt Kahl, who was out of retirement actually to work on the character designs. They worked on that, they revised it. They built their story mostly out of the first two books, which caused, and they made some more changes, which caused another person to leave over creative differences. John Musker and Ron Clements, who were both working on it, cited creative differences, so they were removed and then were put on the Great Mouse Detective. Not happy with that concept for the Horn King. Hale was actually the one that turned the Horn King into this thin creature with the hood, the glowing red eyes and everything. And he's actually a kind of a composite villain of several characters from the books. So they're working on this. It was supposed to be Disney's second... it was supposed to be one of like the second Disney it was supposed to be the first full-length animated movie to be filmed in widescreen 70 millimeter since Sleeping Beauty was the last one to be done in 70 millimeter. However, they started to film it in the 70 millimeter with the 70 millimeter like template measurements that they had been given. And then they realized that the 70 millimeter that was used for Sleeping Beauty was not the same 70 millimeter used now.
Oh.
So everything that they had done had to be scrapped.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Oh. I feel bad for those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's just. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So that again caused some issues. So they're still working on it. Yeah, they start essentially again, and get to the point where it's like, okay, we've got something we can show the higher ups, and they can give us a thumbs up, thumbs down, change this, change that, whatever. So they show their first cut of it to Jeffrey Katzenberg and
our buddy.
Yeah. He hated it. He was like, no, you need to cut like 10 minutes from this. And they were like, what?
Which if you understand animation and you understand storytelling,
yeah,
10 minutes is a lot.
Yes. He had issues with some of the kind of the climax of the movies where it got really, really dark when the Horn King is reviving his army. The cauldron born, the undead army. There's a point earlier in the movie, once Taran acquires the magic sword, that it's not on purpose, but he accidentally kills someone that needed to be cut. But then the whole cauldron born sequence was way more grim, way more macabre. Like they were way more like grotesque looking at one point. A couple of the undead grab like whoever those guys were, like Vikings or something, the ones having the feast when Taran mm-hmm. first arrives, a couple of them get grabbed and pulled into this liquid that I guess is like acid or something, and there you see like their flesh burn off their bodies as they turn into skeleton. Become part of the, yeah. So it was pretty dark.
Yes.
So yeah, Katzenberg was all like, no, this needs to be fixed. Otherwise kids are not gonna like this. But apparently Joe Hale was like, dude, we've like this movie's been in production for like a decade almost. Like, seriously, it's like we're so close to being done. Why are you doing this? And apparently, Katzenberg was like, fine, if you're not gonna do it, I'll do it myself. Had the film brought to him, and he went into an editing bay and was going to cut the film himself.
Oh gosh.
Oh boy.
Oh gosh. No.
Apparently, Hale went to Eisner, who was the new, you know.
Hey, boss, guess what's going to happen?
Yeah. And Eisner put his foot down and convinced Katzenberg to stop. He did, but he still insisted that the film be edited. So the release got moved from Christmas of 84 to July of 1985. So they eventually cut 12 minutes, which in an animated movie is quite a bit.
Now what they should do is, that they still have it in the vault, they should do an extended edition with the 12 minutes put back in, so we can see if it makes a better tale.
Yeah
if they still have it, and if they
right, true.
Yeah. So there was also some scenes that were written and reanimated. So it was just, yeah. So stuff got cut and stuff got moved around and stuff got changed. And I guess if you pay really close attention, there's some spots where it's like really obvious with like the soundtrack. You can see it in, and again, this is shown in that video I watched on YouTube that I'll have linked in the show notes. Like when we're first introduced to Gurgi, the way he's animated looks different than the way he looks in the rest of the movie. Like his colors are slightly different.
Yeah.
There's some weird cuts in scenes. So like if you really, really pay attention, you can see that like this was kind of a hack job.
Yeah. There's one point when they're escaping the castle, like through the stream underneath, and you know, they have to unlock the door. Or the gate to get out, and then they cut to a different angle. So Taryn unlocks the gate, or you know, opens the gate, and then you cut to a different angle, and the gate's still locked, but they're still trying to get out. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of backgrounds that just, you know, they just didn't finish, or they didn't, you know, there wasn't enough time to do a good quality check on some of it, and it kind of shows. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but it's just like, oh gosh, guys.
Yeah. Little bit. Yeah. It's which, you know, when I was watching it, I didn't really notice because the way that they did cut it and everything, like the movie, it goes at a pretty good clip.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was just trying to take everything in, but yeah, right. Once that stuff is like pointed out to you, I'm sure it's one of those that it's like, now you're going to see it everywhere you look.
Oh, yeah.
So, they eventually finished it. It was released with a PG-13 or PG rating because it was released in 70mm with 70mm 6-track surround sound. It was officially budgeted at $25 million. According to Don Hahn, he says that it cost $44 million to produce, which would have made it the most expensive animated film ever made at the time. It grossed $21.3 million domestically. So,
I mean, that's a 1980s
money. Yeah.
That's a 1980s money. Can you just imagine what it would be now?
Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Right. Yikes. I mean, it did not make nearly the money
it has earned the nickname as the film that almost killed Disney.
I mean, they did do some merchandising. I've got a Gurgi stuffed plushie in a moving bin somewhere. From my childhood.
It's just, well, and like one article I read about it was saying that it got beat out. It opened at number 2, second to the Care Bears movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Care Bears movie at that point had been out for like 3 or 4 months. So that kind of tells you what was going on. I mean, maybe like the marketing failed down, or just people were all like, no, this is too scary. Kids are going to go see Care Bears again. But yeah, it's really sad because again, this could have been something really special, really good. And just for the time, they didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to do it that way. They wanted to do something completely different, which was not the vision that the animators, the directors had. Of course, you know, there were so many people brought in to do this. So it's not like, well, which vision are we going with? And you know, ultimately, they got to go with the whoever it is that's signing the checks.
Mm-hmm.
Several animators were, several people actually lost their jobs because of this. Most notably, TV Tropes, the trivia section of theirs mentions Ted Berman and Richard Rich and Joe Hale were all fired. And I will mention here Richard Rich, because as I was growing up, because after he was fired, he went on to help a local company to me here in Utah. They sold animated versions of like Bible stories and American history stories, and I kind of grew up on those. They were always in the mall. That, you know, those kiosks that they all stop you and you can't get away. And my mom was just mm-hmm. always, she was terrible at getting away from those people. So we'd always mm-hmm. end up with a subscription to this. And the character designs of those characters are very distinctive. They've got like this very square chin that mm-hmm. sticks out that you see Taryn has. Like, I'm watching Black Cauldron, I'm like, that looks like all those characters from those scripture
prominent
movies I
distinctive
watch.
Chin.
Yes. And if you've ever seen the animated Swan Princess, which he also did, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. because we had a subscription to this thing, and he was doing the Swan Princess as sort of a pseudo indie thing. So they were promoting the heck out of this for people who were subscribed to these videos. Yeah, you watch that movie, and like Prince Derek has got that little knobby chin, or that the way the mouth works. It's like I can always see where his animation style is, because it's that facial shape.
Mm-hmm.
Because I watched all those videos when I was a kid. It's just there's a scene where Taryn is running, and he's kind of this sort of bow-legged, clumsy. He's running away, and the floor is falling out from under him, and he looks like he's about to trip over his own feet. That's a Richard Rich thing. I can see that because of all that. And it's just funny to me that something so kind of low budget and low tech, it's reflected in a major Disney movie, a Disney movie that flopped, true, but it cracks me up every time mm-hmm. I see it. I'm just like, I knew who did that one. Or who directed mm-hmm. it, I suppose. Anyway, but yeah, so anyway, Black Cauldron.
Mm-hmm.
We time will tell if we either get, you know, the stuff that was cut gets pulled mm-hmm. out of the trash bin somewhere, or it gets remade or something. Supposedly yeah. Disney rebought the rights.
Yeah, they reacquired them in 2016, but yeah. It seems like they've just kind of been sitting on them still, because I don't know. It seems like they're reluctant to revisit it, even though nowadays people would be, you know, they'd be a bit more receptive to a mm-hmm. fantasy adaptation, since there's been so many other ones. But again, Disney is not, had the greatest track record with movie or book to movie adaptations, which we mentioned that in our episode about book to movie adaptations. Mm-hmm. But maybe, I mean, Lloyd Alexander, when the movie came out, the author of the books, he said that it was so different from his books, he was just able to sit back and enjoy it as its own thing. Which I mm-hmm. always thought was kind of funny, because we always have this image of the author going, oh no, they ruined my thing. And then there's Lloyd Alexander saying, hey, this is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is enjoyable. So I don't know. It's an odd duck for sure. Like I said, it's one I enjoy. It's not, mm-hmm. I'm not going to ever say it's one of my top favorites, mm-hmm. but it's not, I don't agree with Disney treating it like the black sheep of the family.
They shouldn't. I mean, yeah. It was something that they tried and it fell flat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's just kind of unfortunate, because like I said, at that time,
glimmers there that it could have turned into this
multi-trilogy
thing.
Yeah, it's like it felt like that they could have done a sequel. And a lot of animated movies, like you've got the Secret of Nim, is mm-hmm. very dark and grim. Mm-hmm. You know, like Labyrinth mm-hmm. and Dark Crystal, and I'm trying to think of some other, you know, just 80s kids movies were just known for being dark and gritty.
Yeah,
and kind of having that scary factor. Like I think of or, you know, movies like Gremlins, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw E.T. when I was four. It was that on video. Too, yeah. That one scared the crap out of me. I still am kind of weird about it just because I have these things, but people love it. It's a classic, and it's one of those that people go back to and just rewatch over and over. And it's like, you know, Disney kind of had an opportunity with this to kind of be part of that sort of movement, I guess, in the 80s of doing the grimmer, little scarier, you know, sort of thing. And they didn't really want to, I guess. I don't know. And maybe it's just because that's not the Disney way. But then again, the 80s were kind of, they were, you know, a lot of their, like you said, Rachel, a lot of their old guard had retired or had gone on to other things or had just, you know, passed on, a lot of them. And mm-hmm. they just were still trying to figure out how to stay afloat without the old timers that made the Disney company what it was at the mm-hmm. time. And one thing about this is that, you know, it kind of was a wake up call to Disney to be like, you can't just coast on what you've done before. You've got to, you know, reimagine yourself and reinvent yourself. And then a few more years, you'd have the Little Mermaid and mm-hmm. the, you know, the Disney Renaissance. So, you know, maybe you have to have a few bombs to get to the good stuff later on, mm-hmm. and to get mm-hmm. that creativity back in your system. So, you know, for what it is, maybe, you know, they needed something like the Black Cauldron to be like, oh, well, I guess we better, you know, reevaluate what we're doing and see if there's something better we can do. And, you know, some people would say that needs to happen nowadays with all these live action remakes and sequels and reboots and things that just kind of in general that people are doing. But mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting to think, like, yeah, this movie is known as the one that nearly killed Disney, but then in four more years they come out with something that is now considered a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And once again, the universe is telling us, hey, you should do an episode about Eisner and Katzenberg.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
This keeps coming up.
It does. It does. I mean,
it's going to happen. This one's that particular topic. It's going to require some extensive research. This
yes. We're all, mm-hmm.
where we can just watch a movie and then read like the trivia section on IMDb and call it a day.
This one takes some research. So, you know, maybe yep. if we start this week and we start thinking, okay, we're gonna read up on this and come back and what did you learn? What are we gonna present in the group project?
Well, let's see. Oh, wait a minute. This movie. Oh, Eisenberg and Katzenberg had a chip. Okay. Another one. Ooh, I'm sensing pattern here.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. I'm gonna go tell.
Yeah.
I know. I just think it's funny that you know, Katzenberg was in the editing suite and they had to run. Like, Mom.
Yeah.
They took my toy. They took my toys away.
Like, Dad. Jeffy said my movie sucked.
You gotta come tell him to stop it.
He's got the skizzers.
Oh my gosh. No offense to that director, but yeah, that's what we're thinking right now.
Yeah.
He made a dumb edit.
It's like, that's not what Gergi's supposed to look like.
Oy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then, and, you know, Walt somewhere watching all this, like, what are you doing with my studio?
Mm-hmm. Roy, smack some sense into those two, please.
But anyway, there's the Black Cauldron, everybody.
Yeah.
If any of our listeners want to chime in about their thoughts of it, is this a movie you like? Is you think it's an underrated classic? Do you agree with that it needed to be? Do we need to see those extra 12 minutes? Just, you know, chime in with your thoughts. Is it a good Halloween movie? That was kind of why we picked this topic to discuss, because it's Halloween and it is. It's got that scary edge to it. Well, you know, drop us some feedback. Our email address is fiveishfangirls@gmail.com. You can also leave feedback on our Facebook page or Instagram, and you can find links to those things on our website, which is thefiveishfangirls.com. I got to get those two straight. So yeah, thefiveishfangirls.com, and you can find all our show notes, find links to our social media, to our YouTube channel, places where you can download the podcast, which, you know, wherever you download podcasts, we're going to be there. So check us out there. You know, and leave comments, and we will read them out as feedback on the show if you feel so inclined to do that. And then also, if you want to help support the show, we have a Patreon account that you can chip in a few bucks there. We also have a Ko-fi account. We have merch on our Redbubble store, so you can get, you know, stickers and tote bags and other fun things with the funny things that we come up with. And also we have an Amazon affiliate link. So if you're doing some shopping on Amazon, click that. And then also our Audible subscription link. If you have not subscribed to Audible yet, and you can do so through our link and get 2 free audiobooks. And so maybe you can find the Chronicles of Prydain and actually listen to them and feel like, oh, that's what the story is supposed to be. So check that out. And thank you also for all of our supporters, for all the people who send in feedback or, you know, listen to us, interact with us online. We're very grateful for all that. We're glad that you are enjoying what we do. Hope we're helping keep you sane through this crazy year, because, you know, it's helping us stay sane by doing this. So anyway, and if there's anything you want to talk about that we've discussed before, like I said, leave us feedback. And thanks again.
Yep. Very much. All right. So with that, we shall sign off for this week.
This is Brittany Bevham saying goodnight.
This is Chrissy saying goodnight from Salt Lake City.
This is Holly from Wisconsin saying good evening.
And this is Rachel in Indianapolis, Indiana. Oh, I wish I'd stayed a toad.
To the Five-ish Fangirls podcast. You can find more episodes and information at thefiveishfangirls.com. Any and all books, movies, games, and any other forms of media mentioned are owned and operated by the respective copyright holders. No copyright infringement is intended or implied. If you wish to support the show, the easiest way is to leave us a rating and review. More ratings and reviews will make it easier for others to find the show. If you wish to support us monetarily, you can do so at patreon.com/fiveishfangirlspodcast. All money goes towards fees and equipment to keep the show going. For official Five-ish Fangirls merchandise, visit redbubble.com/people/fiveishfangirls. We love hearing from our listeners and encourage feedback. You can email us at fiveishfangirls@gmail.com. You can also like and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/fiveishfangirls. Thank you so much for listening, and may the squee be with you.